Okay, so first of all, welcome to everybody. It's a little bit different format than our normal learning time together, but technology is amazing. What could I say? We have a chance to learn in a different format tonight, and I wanted just to speak a little bit about getting ready for Pesach. It's a little bit of a different style of preparation than we normally have. Many who thought they would be in one location for Pesach are quickly, rapidly learning that their Pesach plans are not what they had thought. Reminds us, there's a good Yiddish expression, means a person makes plans and God laughs. We think we're running the show, and Hashem gives us a very quick reminder that we're not running the show. There's a very strange atmosphere that's happening right now in the world that people are nervous, people are confused, and we try to connect a little bit to this world of redemption. Okay. All right. So if you look on the source sheets you have in front of you, there's a sefer called Ben HaMelech VeHaNazir. This sefer, see, has an amazing story in it that it describes a meeting where there was a Nazir who saw the Ben Melech, and the king's son was not behaving appropriately. He was doing all sorts of inappropriate things. So the Nazir wanted to give him a mashal. So he tells him a story about an eagle and a chicken. And the eagle and the chicken are like walking together on the ground. And the eagle's looking at the little chicken and thinks, I'm not on the same level. I'm like the king of all the birds. I can't be here on the ground with you. So the eagle decides it's going to fly up, and it goes to the top of a roof. And then the chicken says, "Oh, the eagle went up to the roof? I'll also do that." So the chicken, like, you know, whatever it does, climbs up, flies up, and gets to the top of the roof. And now he's sitting there the same place as the eagle. And the eagle's like looking at the chicken. The chicken's looking at the eagle. And the eagle says, "I'm out of here. I'm not done." And the eagle, just in a big burst of energy, flies up all the way up to the clouds. And the chicken, like, just can't compete. And the chicken goes, "Wow, that's a king. That's like, you know, that's the highest type of bird you could ever have." So that's the story that's brought down the sefer Ben HaMelech VeHaNazir. But the idea is that sometimes we forget that we have the ability to soar and to fly, and we look at us as being just like everybody else. And the reality is, it's not true. We're the Am HaNivchar. We're the ones who HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen, and with that being chosen has a tremendous amount of responsibility. And if I'll show you now, look at the first source here, Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara here is talking about, again, if you don't have the source sheets in front of you, it's not the end of the world. The Gemara is talking about what's the correct bracha we should make before learning Torah every morning. Men and women are obligated to make a bracha, Birchas HaTorah. So the Gemara wants to know what exactly is the source of that. So Rav Hamnuna Omar, Asher Bochar Banu Mikol Ha'amim. So we say this so many times, we're not necessarily thinking about the words. Who's chosen and selected us from all of the Amim. V'nasalanu es Torah so, and he gave us his Torah. Hashem chose us out of everybody. Every single nation gave us the Torah. Baruch Atah Hashem, Nosein HaTorah. Blessed are you, God, who gives us the Torah. Present tense. Amar Rav Hamnuna, Zuhi Me'ula Shebebrachos. This is the best version. That idea of thinking about ourselves as being the Am HaNivchar. And in order to get into that proper frame of mind, that's what Yom Tov does. The Yom Tov, all Yom Tovim, but specifically Pesach. Now we're 30 days before Pesach, so we're thinking about it and we're preparing for it. It reminds us of what we're really supposed to be, is this nation that everybody looks up to as role models. As we live the type of existence and the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and all the things that the way we hold ourselves and we speak to people and we dress and we talk and the whole way we conduct ourselves in our business, we're honest. And in terms of morality, where we're upright people, that's what it's all about. So if you look in source number two, Parshas Yisro, V'atem Tiuli Mamleches Kohanim V'goy Kadosh. We're supposed to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, a Goy Kadosh, special for that. Okay. Yeah, I'll tell you a story that I heard from a Ephraim Waxman. And this whole shmooze time is based upon something that he had spoken about. He told a story about an aguna. So I think this came up in class and people asking, what are you? An aguna is a woman who, unfortunately, husband refuses to give her a get. Now, it's wrong, and these types of people should be strung up by their toenails, and we have to do everything we can to force them into doing it. So in Israel, they once took a man who refused to give his wife a get, and they threw him into jail. Like, just nothing got through to him. Nothing made any sort of impression there. Threatening, and they put him in jail. And still in jail, the guy's stubborn. He refused to give his wife the proper thing, to give his wife a get. So they had one Rav who was close to, he knew him, and he said, look, I have an idea. The keeping him in jail right now is not going to get him to change. What you need to do is to let him out of jail for a month. Let him experience a little bit of freedom. You know, when you're sitting here in a jail, you get used to your surroundings. You forget, oh, I'm miserable here, but I get used to it. If you leave him out of jail, give him a month of freedom, and then threaten him after that. Say, look, if you don't get your act together and do the right thing, then in that case, I'm going to throw you back here. So that's what they did. They gave him like a get out of jail for free for a month. And they said, if you don't get your act together, I'm going to put you back. And he goes, okay, I'm not interested. And he ended up doing the right thing. So the idea is that we could sometimes become so used to and so, you know, comfortable in our surroundings, even if they're not in the ideal situations. There's an experiment they did. I would not recommend this. This is not like, if any of you have like sensitive animal rights, you know, this is not like a good story to tell, but I'll tell it anyway. Why not? They did an experiment with a frog, and you guys know like what a beaker is in the science things, like the little tube, right? So what they did is they put a frog in a beaker, and it was room temperature. And again, it's cruel. I'm not advocating. Please don't go home and try this. Oh, look what Rabbi Jaffe talked about, how to torture frogs. But what they did in the science experiment was as follows. They took like the beaker, right, and then they turned up the temperature slowly, degree by degree by degree. So the water was at like room temperature, 98 degrees. 100 degrees, 102, it got like hotter and hotter. And the frog was in the beaker. His surroundings were getting hotter and hotter. And the water got so unbearable, but the frog never even thought to jump out. There was no lid on top. It could have just jumped out and would have been freed. But the frog ended up getting literally fried alive in the hot boiling water because it didn't realize that. And the lesson, the mussar we could take from such a story, please don't do this at home. I'd be terrified. I'd be horrified if I heard you girls went home and did this. But the lesson to learn, we can become so used to, so comfortable in our surroundings, even when they're damaging us and they're harming us, and we don't realize we have to get out of here. You know, many times a person can be involved in a relationship that's not healthy for them. A very unhealthy relationship. And you tell the man, you tell the woman, you tell the kid, what are you doing? This is not a good place. It's not a good space for you to be in. No, it's not so bad. And they don't realize it. So sometimes you need an outsider to come along and say, look, Mamleches Kohanim Begoy Kadosh. Don't be content to be on a low level. Bring yourselves high up. Let me show you another thing. In you look in source number 3, the Torah tells in Parashas Bahaloischa that a person could very well get used to that slave mentality. Where is it? Zocharnu es hadagim asher nechol b'mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish that we used to eat when we were in Mitzrayim. And those were the good old days. Yeah, that was the good old days. We were being tortured. We were being beaten. Oh, but we got free fish. We got sushi. We got herring. We got whatever it is. We got every type of salmon, tuna, lox and bagels. It was gewaldic. It wasn't gewaldic. It was horrible. We were slaves. But in that claim, remember how good it used to be. So that idea of trying to keep ourselves elevated and connecting to a world with of big hasagas, big aspirations. You know, tonight is the 21st of Adar. It's the yahrzeit of a very big rabbi, the Rebbe Melech of Lezhensk. And I don't know what the travel restrictions now, how many people can have a chance to go there, but it's a very big thing that people travel to go and daven by his kever in Europe. But just mentioning this tzaddik, it should be a zechus for all of us. So that's right before Nisan. The Gemara tells us that in Nisan we were redeemed, and in Nisan the future geul is going to happen. Show of hands, how many of you guys remember we learned about a sveik sveika? Do you remember that? Yes, no sveik sveika? Okay. So there's something called a double doubt, sfeik sfeik. There's something also called a suffik hashokul, which means a 50-50%. It's not like there's like a majority one way or the other, maybe this way. It's exactly half and half. So what comes along, the Chafetz Chaim said that in the month of Nisan, there's a suffik hashokul, 50-50% chance that the Geula is going to happen. But the Yetzer Hara comes and makes us into big doubters. Oh, maybe yes, maybe no. I was sitting here. I'm in quarantine. I have not been out of my house in a very, very, very long time. And your brain starts doing things and you're sitting here like looking at the walls. Okay, you want to see my walls? There's my walls. There's my guitars. There's the treadmill. Oh, there's my little daughter. There's a piano. Okay. You go bonkers. But on my way to bonkerhood, I started having the following thought. I just stopped and I pinched myself. I said, what if? What if the Geula is really going to come this year in Nisan? And we're less than 2 weeks away from an amazing redemption. I started thinking, what would I do differently? What would my brachas be like if I really knew that we're at the very end of it? This is like the last few moments before Mashiach comes. How would I daven? How would my midos be? Learning chesed, tzedakah, all the last things we'd want to get in before Mashiach comes. And I got very excited. Again, nobody knows what's happening. And I'm extremely hesitant when I hear of people getting up and saying, this is why the coronavirus is happening. It's because of this avera, it's because of that avera. My opinion is, unless you have a hotline to heaven, and God like sent you a WhatsApp and told you exactly why Hashem is doing this, how do you know? We don't know. And it's cruel, and it's insensitive to get up and start telling people, this is why it's happening. It's like a moving target. You pick whatever you want to focus on, and then this became the reason why the coronavirus is here. There's not enough people on keeping Shabbos. People speaking Lashon Hara. There's not sneers. There's not there's talking in the shuls. The anti-vaxxers, the yes-vaxxers. Everybody wants to like find their own pet peeve and stick it in. Every one of us has what to improve upon. But the idea is something big is happening. Something big. Elishav, I see someone's listening next to you. Do you remember in your lifetime anything like this ever happening, that like everything shut down? I don't either. This is big. We don't know why. We don't know why it's happening, but something big is happening. So let's hope and prepare that this is the last few moments before the Geula comes. And we'll try. We'll try to do our best. Let me go on to a few months. There's actually a minhug that by Shvoch HaMoscha at the Seder, that they open up all the doors. Now, in my house, we just open up the front door. But sometimes they open up all the doors of the whole house because the Geula could come in through the back window, through the bathroom door, through this door. All the rooms in the house should be open, prepared for the Geula to come. Let me share with you an amazing medrash. Turn to the next page, Shir HaShirim. It's source number 4, if you have it in front of you. If not, I'll just make it up because you don't have the source in front of you, so you can't tell whether I'm saying the truth or not. Just joking. That's a virtual joke. Even my virtual jokes are funny. All right, here we go. Where I underlined, fourth line down. The Klal Yisrael was getting ready for the Geula. This is on the pasuk called Dodi Hinei Zebo. The voice of my beloved is knocking. When Hashem wants to bring the Geula, Eino Mevi the Cheshben Oseichem. Hashem doesn't work out and say, oh, I said that it's going to be 400 years of exile. Hashem doesn't work with any cheshbonos. He just goes straight. Ela midaleg al harm. He jumps over. He transcends any type of limitations. Rabbi Nechemya Omar, what is now 3 lines from the bottom. Kol dodi hine zebo zemoshe. Bishasha omer li Yisrael the chodesh hazeh. In this month, the month of Nisan, atem nigolin, you're going to be redeemed. Omer lo Moshe Rabbeinu. Heich ana nigolin. Come on, Moshe, how could we be redeemed? Hallo ein biyadenu meisen tovim. We have no meisen tovim in our hands. Amar lehem hoyel v'chofetz begulaschem. Since Hashem desires and wants to redeem you, eino mevi maasechem haroim. Hashem's not even going to look at that. When Hashem wants to bring the geula, He's not going to say, oh, you're missing this, and you're missing that, and you didn't do this right. Hashem's not going to look to that. It gets even better. Third line. Bishar shabov amal Yisrael. B'chodesh zeh atem nigalim amal Moshe Rabbeinu. Heichan nigalim chometz Yisrael mitunefes me'avodas kochav mishalanu. all of the land of Egypt is soiled with our idol worship. Such a low level. The Chazal teaches we were on the 49th level of impurity. And yet, what? Hashem says, Moshe says, because Hashem wants to redeem you, Eino mevi be'avodas kochav mishalechem. He doesn't look at your idols, at your getchkas, at your mistakes. If Hashem wants it to happen, He's going to bring it. And that's an amazing thing, that we think about what Hashem could do for us in bringing the redemption. If He wants it, it'll happen literally in the blink of an eye. This amazing story from Rabbi Yaakov Linsky. He was in Israel, and he related a story from, unclear if it happened to him himself, or he heard it from someone who had happened to, and there was a special bunk where there was like a young man, and then there was a Rebbesha Einik, like he came from a very rabbinic family. And the friend said to him, look, Pesach is 2 weeks away. We got to make matzahs. Come on, how are we going to make matzahs? No, I have a plan. I'm going to get a little bit of flour. And through tremendous sacrifice, they were able to bake. I'm telling a shortened version of the story. They were able to bake two kazaysim. They said, one kazayas for me and one kazayas for you. Yeah, but it's like, it's a big object. Like, how are we gonna get it back in the camp? He says, I'm going to stick it under my shirt and I'm going to walk back into the camp. And when he was walking, the Nazi, Yamach Shimon, noticed there was like a bulge in his shirt, in his underneath his whatever was his clothes he was wearing, and he saw the bump, and the Nazi smashed him, and he took the matzah and he started crushing it with his boot. This Jew realized what was happening, had been beaten very badly. With his last energy before he lost consciousness, he grabbed a few of the crumbs and he passed out. He doesn't remember much after that, but when he regained consciousness, he saw that he still had these. He had one kazayas. He had like half the amount that he had the crumbs of the matzah that he had baked for the Pesach. So now there was an argument between the two of them, who gets that one kazayas? Was it the one who had risked his life and had gotten beaten up over it, or it was the one who had the idea in the first place to bake the matzah? They worked out a compromise. And what happened was, look, the son who came from a rabbinic family says, I know the Haggadah by heart. I know Shir HaShirim by heart. I'm going to sing, I'm going to chant that, and then we'll make a deal. You can eat the matzah. I eat the matzah, but you'll get all the schar. And that was the deal they made. So he ate the matzah, but he didn't get any schar. And the one who did not eat the mitzah, eat the matzah, he got the schar. The following morning, it was the morning of Pesach, and they were in line. And this young inmate was on such a high from the last night, he started saying Hallel with a bracha. In the line, as they're marching, and he had such a simcha, he jumped like out of line. The Nazis saw him and killed him right then on the spot. This is a true story. 30 years later, this man survived the war, and he had a dream. And his friend came to him and said, I'm in the world of truth now, and I want to go back on the deal we made. The deal was that I got to eat the matzah, but I didn't get any reward from it. I want to go back, and I want reward for the fact that I ate the matzah that night in the camps. So this guy was like, you know, he didn't know what to make of the dream, so he went. I have it here in my notes. He went Machnekov Rebbe, and he said, Rebbe, this is what happened. What should I do? So the Rebbe told him, Yosher, the upright thing would be, you should give in. Why? Because you're still alive. You can do mitzvahs. You can learn. You can daven. You can do chesed. This person is in the Olam HaEmes. And they can no longer do things to give him. Give him the schar. But you have to really, really mean it. You can't just say it. You have to go. He gave him the keys to his shul. He said, go daven, open up the aron, and I want you to go say it with a complete heart, that you really moichel him and you give him the schar. So the guy went, and for 2 hours, he stood there opening. Now just to pause for a second, if you think about what happened over here, this is amazing. here's somebody who was killed, Kiddush Hashem, in the war, saying Hallel on Pesach. And he still felt, I would like the reward for the fact that I ate the matzah. You think, what do you mean? What more reward do you want? You're in the highest level. The answer is, we don't realize how much schar there is for every single mitzvah there is. Every single act of learning, davening, there's so much schar there. So that's the answer. He was able to say it with a complete heart that he forgave him, and therefore he gave him in. Let me show you a few more sources here. There's a Rambam in source number 5. Bechol dor vador. In every single generation, the person has to see themselves as if they actually went out of Mitzrayim. So, why is it only by this mitzvah? You know, I don't say we just had Purim. There's no statement in Chazal, everyone is chayv to see themselves as if they were living in Shushan Habira and got saved. There's no statement that everyone's chayv to see themselves that they sat in a sukkah. Why is it specifically by this mitzvah of Pesach that we're commanded to see ourselves? So in order to answer that, I'll show you one more measure on the last page you have in front of you. I'm going to skip a little bit. I'm going to read, just for the sake of time, I'm going to read, I have the English translation here. This is source number 8, Medrash Rabbah Vayikra. It's also Medrash in Koheles. It once happened, a certain person was ascending from Bavel. He sat down to rest on the road when he saw two birds quarreling with each other, and one of them killed the other. The surviving bird went and fetched an herb and placed on the other and revived her. It's a good thing, the man thought, if I take this herb and revive with the dead of the land of Israel. As he continued to make aliyah, he saw a fox dead and decaying on the road. It would be a good thing, he thought, if I tried on the fox. He placed the herb on him and revived him. He went until he reached the ladders of Tzur in Lebanon. When he reached the ladders of Tzur, he saw a lion slain and decaying on the road. It would be a good thing, he thought, if I tried on the lion. He placed some of the herb on him, and the lion came back to life. The lion arose and devoured him. That's the Medrash. Lot to talk about with many, many commentators on this Medrash. Want to understand what's the symbolism, what do the birds represent, what does the fox represent, what does the lion represent. There is an idea from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh that the two birds represent the two Mashiachs, Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. And the fox, some of the commentators explain, well, the fox is known, he's a big pikeach. He's a very wise and clever animal. And we talk about this herb that brings back to life. It can be symbolic of the Jewish people. Throughout our long, long gullus, we have used our own intellect and insight to help every single civilization we've been in. If you think I'm joking, on your own time, Google the following fact. Look to see how many Nobel laureates there are that are actually Jewish. When you think of the percentage of the Jewish population in the world and how many awards we've won, we've risen to the top and made contributions in every single field, in medicine, in literature, in music, in science, in philosophy. Every single field has been Jews helping and bringing that. That's the idea about using this herb that revitalizes and tchias amesim. That was it. However, sometimes we use the kochos and they harm us. That idea about the helping out the lion comes back and devours us. Sometimes we use our own koach and it backfires. We don't use all of our kochos and all of our talents in the right way, and we end up harming ourselves. So some of the commentators want to take this measure and say, look, the idea is to use of our kochos, but to do it in the right way. One final thought for tonight, and again, so much to talk about, but it's late, almost late. The last source is the opening mission in Pesachim. It says, Or labar osur bodkin es hachametz leor haner. This is the source for doing bedikas chametz, that we search our houses, our homes, in any place where, chametz could be brought. So if you have a normal household and people eat in normal places like in the kitchen, in the living room, the dining room. That's all you have to search. But if you happen to have like a two-year-old in your house, if any of you have little brothers or sisters, so that means you have to search every single place because two-year-olds don't understand the rules of normalcy. And they bring their Cheerios and their Cheez-Its and their popcorn and their granola bars and their jelly beans to every single room in the house. So the halacha is you have to search everywhere. We search all of our rooms. Lamaisa, that's what we do. We search all of our houses because you never know where the chametz could actually be bought. But the idea is as follows. If you look at this, it says, Or larba oser bodkines ha-chametz. We look at the chametz itself. Chametz is representative of the Yetzirah. And we look at the Yetzirah and we say, did I bring this into my life unnecessarily? I'm bodek the chametz. It doesn't say you check the house. Look at it, it says again. Or larba oser bodkines ha-chametz. We look at the chametz itself, le'or haner, by the light of the candle. Or Torah, by the light of the Torah. We hold the Torah up and that's the scale that we judge things by. We look to see, we look at the chametz itself, those things that are chametz stick in our lives, those things that are yitzahar in our lives, we say, well, did I bring that on unnecessarily? Did I do things that might have brought it into my life that I didn't have to? So that's part of the teshuvah process. The closer, the quicker the Jewish people do teshuvah, the closer the geula will happen. And that's the simcha behind this. When we think about all of the miracles that Hashem did for us, took a lowly, lowly slave nation and the lowest levels of Tumah, Hashem says, I'm not looking at your actions. I just want to bring the geula. I think that now answers the question that we started off with. Why is it by Pesach we have to see ourselves as if we actually went out? Because we have to realize that no matter what level we've fallen to, no matter what mistakes we've made, no matter what we've done in the past, it could be fixed. We can do tshuva. We can improve. And Hashem is waiting for us. There's a very big asifa tomorrow at, I think, 1:30. I was in touch with Mrs. Kobri, and I believe the schedule is going to be adjusted that we should be davening tomorrow. This is a Klal Yisrael. We're in an Eis Tzara right now. And let us not think that our actions are insignificant. Let's remind ourselves that every single thing we do is incredibly significant, is incredibly meaningful. And that could be machriya. That could tip the scales. So we have to have faith in ourselves. I don't have the sefer in front of me, but I'll just end with the Reb Tzadok. Reb Tzadok says, just like a person has to have emuna in Hashem, a person has to have emuna in themselves. We have to have emuna in ourselves. What does that mean? Emun in ourselves means that our actions, our deeds, our machshavas, everything we do is significant. Hashem should help us and give us special desiata d'shmaya, should give us a lot of rachmi right now. The Klal Yisrael needs it. Our yeshivas are closed. Our shuls are closed. The most powerful weapon we have right now is tefillah b'tzibur. And that was taken from us. That's not a small thing. So as we daven, each one of us in our own Dalet Amos, in our own confined spaces, from a place of quarantine, from a place of social distancing, wherever we find ourselves is to connect to Klal Yisrael. Girls, I'm just telling you, we are living now in unprecedented times. I don't think this is, certainly not in my lifetime. And it's something we should not take lightly, not just, okay, dismiss it, okay, yeah, things are crazy right now, pass the orange juice. Let's pause for a moment. Let's think about this and try to think, what can we do to make the situation better? And especially if you know people who are alone right now, please reach out to them. Give them a phone call, send them a text. Hey, I'm just thinking about you. Do you need anything? Now is a chance that we could do unprecedented acts of chesed for people who are either physically isolated or emotionally isolated. Let's make some achdus right now. That's what Klal Yisrael needs. We need achdus. We need a genuine care and concern for each other. And that's zechus. This should be the last time we're in Gullus, and we should bring the Korban Pesach with Mashiach Tzidkenu this year in Yerushalayim. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good
night.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bela!